Wednesday, February 21st, 2024. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Hope your week is off to a good start. Hope it is going well right now in your world, and I hope that you, your family, your friends, everyone is staying strong, and you are all staying healthy right now. And of course, this can be a little bit of a difficult time of year, right? Because it was the first weekend without any football of any kind. Yeah, that is always a little bit tough, right? We did have the NBA All-Star festivities, right? Wow, that was rough. I mean, I guess you install a glow-in-the-dark, clear floor with goldfish swimming in it or whatever when your product that you're putting on the floor is that bad, right? Kind of like that ugly stripper. It's got the clear heels with the goldfish swimming in them. Very similar situation. Whatever you can do to bring the attention from what's up above, right? You know, I actually tried to watch some of the events this weekend. I mean, the three-point contest was decent. And then I tried to watch the dunk contest on Saturday night. And you know, every single year, I think the dunk contest that I'm watching is the worst dunk contest I have ever seen in my entire life. But then the next year, they somehow managed to beat it. And good news, NBA, this year was literally the worst dunk contest that I have ever seen. Nice job. And then on Sunday, we got to the actual All-Star game itself. Look, I know. You can say it now. I'm an old man yelling, "Get off my lawn," to the young kids of the day, right? But remember when the players actually went out and played hard? Not for any reason other than the fact that they had pride because they wanted to be the baddest dude on the floor. Yeah, those days are long over. Remember, these guys are getting bonus checks for playing and they still won't play hard. There's no defense whatsoever. They don't hustle at all. There are sloppy passes. There's poor shooting. There's really poor fundamentals in this game. It was tough to watch. But you know the worst part? The worst part about that sloppy All-Star game? People that don't watch the NBA, but then they tune in for that spectacle of the All-Star game, they think this is how the NBA actually looks. Hang on a second. Let's see. No fundamentals. Poor shot selection. Sloppy passes. No defense. They don't really play hard. Who am I kidding? This is how the NBA actually looks. Hey, before we jump in today, just want to remind you, make sure you're stopping by DailyDoseSports.com every week. We have new articles going up there every week. We have links to the podcast. We have links to the YouTube video. And yes, we have links to Daily Dose gear. If you need a new t-shirt, maybe you need a sweatshirt, maybe you need a hoodie in your life, you can pick whatever color that you want. Be sure you're stopping by DailyDoseSports.com and checking out what is going on over there. In fact, this week, I had an article talking a little bit about the relationship between that NBA and my hometown Denver Nuggets. Might want to make sure you stop by and check that out. Hey, today on the show, we have a very special guest. Speaking of the NBA, I have a guy that made it all the way to the NBA. And I'm telling you right now, this guy has an absolutely insane story to tell. It is one of the most interesting interviews that we have ever done here at the Dose because this guy's story is just so crazy. In fact, let's not waste any more time right now. Let's get over to our interview with Mr. Dean Tolson. Joining us this week on the Daily Dose, I have a guy that I'm really, really looking forward to speaking with. He has a very impressive history. He played basketball at the ultimate level, but he's also currently working to help some kids that desperately need it, which you know that I love. But right now, I would like to welcome Dean Tolson to the Daily Dose. Dean, thank you so much for joining us here today.
thank you for having me on the Daily Dose Sports Podcast Network and have an opportunity to speak to all of your listeners and audience out there. I think we have something very special to share with them today, not only for themselves, but for their kids and the kids in the community as well.
I agree 100%. Dean, I'm gonna look past, you know, the gear that you're wearing. You know, I'm a Bronco fan. I know you're a Chiefs fan. But Dean, where did you grow up? Where was it that you grew up?
Kansas City Chiefs, baby.
Okay. And as a young kid, what did you grow up playing? What were you playing when you were out at the playground? Were you just playing everything like most of us did?
Everything.
Yeah.
Track. We were, you know, play football, play basketball, play tennis. You know, we were athletes back then in the day. You had to be well-rounded and be able to do some of everything to be able to hang with the in crowd of athletes and competitors in the city and in the big school rivals. It was something.
When you were a young kid, so you're a little kid, and usually you're going out and you're wanting to mimic that player you watched, who were the guys that you were like, that's who I want to be, that's what I want to be?
His name was Warren Jabali Armstrong, who went to Wichita State and played for the third winningest coach in American history. His name is Ralph Miller.
Oh, I love this. I absolutely love this. And that was the guy you idolized.
Yeah, I idolized him. He was rookie of the year in the ABA. And Dr. J said that he was a better player than himself.
Wow. That's good stuff.
He talked the game to me.
Sure. Now, are you wearing his number? Are you copying his moves? What are you doing?
I became better than he was.
Wow.
Because he's the first person that showed me how good I really was.
Okay.
And he gave me, he had his brand new Mercedes Benz, and he was a rookie. And he opened the trunk of his car, and he had just boxes and boxes of brand new tennis shoes. And he said, they were Adidas. He said, pick you out 5 pairs, son. Any color you want. He said, what size you wear? I said, 12 and a half. He said, well, I wear a dozen plus one. You're growing to them.
Oh, wow. That is outstanding.
So when I got him out of the trunk, I'm holding the 5 boxes of tennis shoes. He says, set them down. I'm going to show you how to be a pro and sport them shoes. I said, what do you mean sport them? He said, pop the top on one of the boxes and pick out a pair. And he says, when you get them out, he said, take those shoelaces and you tie them in a nice bow, and you wear them around your neck. The tennis shoes is dangling in my chest. And he says, when you walk in the gym, he said, here's a pair of shower shoes. Don't ever wear your shoes with nothing on the hard court. You understand me, young fellow? Now get busy.
I love it.
Around my neck the rest of my NBA high school career.
Oh, you had to be the man walking in with extra pair of shoes. Come on.
Pro leather? That's the first time leather had ever been introduced to the market. Leather tennis shoes.
Okay.
We wore Chuck Taylors.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The canvas shoe was it.
But as a pro, he showed me how it's done. And I was not the only kid in the neighborhood he mentored. He mentored many kids. He was a great guy. And they called him Batman.
That is absolutely awesome. Dean, where did you go to high school?
Central High School, Central Blue Eagles, Kansas City, Missouri, 1970 to 1974. Walt Disney graduated from the same high school.
Okay. How was the school at the time you were there? What were you guys known for? How was your school?
Everything.
Really?
Football, basketball, track, state championships, every that's why I wanted to go there.
Sure. And what all did you play there? Everything?
I ran track and played basketball.
Okay. I always ask, you know, athletes this, high school coach. Who was the high school coach that made a big impact on you?
Jim Wilkerson.
Okay.
Called him Diamond Jim.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one.
Well, I mean, when I was a sophomore, they was 30-0. When I was a junior, they was 30-1. And by the time I was a senior, I became the top player in the entire state of Missouri, averaging 30 points and 20 rebounds a game. And that's when Arkansas did their thing to get me.
Well, let's talk about that, because you end up going to the University of Arkansas.
Yeah.
You play for Larry Van Eman down there.
Yeah.
Who else was recruiting you? There had to be a list of people recruiting you. Who all was coming?
You know, the Midwest was really a Wichita State, Iowa, all of them. It was, if you're a kid 6'8" with a 45-inch vertical,
yeah,
and you 6'9", I could not go to those schools because I didn't have the grades.
That's a very
I wanted to go to the Kansas Jayhawks.
Is that where you wanted to go?
Yeah, if I had the grades.
Sure.
I had, yep. Up on graduation, I had a 1.33 grade point.
Okay.
I was illiterate.
And so your grades steer you to Arkansas. How did Coach Van Eman get you down there? Aside from the grade thing, did he come in? Did he bring you a pretty good?
Recruited me. Yes.
He did.
Yes. I was supposed to go to Xavier with Bob Hopkins, who drafted me to Seattle when I finally finished my 4 years at Arkansas. Okay. Because I went down to Xavier for a visit and they didn't have any money.
Ah, I see.
So, Arkansas is backed by Walmart and they got plenty of money.
Yeah. They absolutely do.
I had a training table that was off the chart.
Oh, I bet.
Oh, and they were feeding them razorback hogs like pigs in a slop sty.
You had to be loving life going down to Fayetteville.
Oh, man. I absolutely loved it. 3 7-course meals 3 times a day.
Oh, yeah. Doesn't get a whole lot better than that. You're at Arkansas. And we'll get to later in your career. But while you're at Arkansas, give me an idea. Give me some of the best players that you squared up against.
Robert Parrish.
Ooh, that's a good one. The Chief was no joke.
Bill Walton.
Oh, another great one.
Marvin Barnes.
Wow. Wow. That's such a fun era. That's such a fun era. That is awesome.
Oh my.
That is absolutely amazing. When you get to Arkansas, you're obviously a big time recruit. They obviously really want you. Is there any kind of, hey, things are a little bit different here, we're a little bit bigger and stronger? Or did you step in from day one and say, no, I got a spot here. I can get this.
Well, if you remember, Daly, freshmen couldn't play varsity.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
So when I came to Arkansas my freshman year, we went on the freshman team 16-0.
Oh, wow.
And I averaged 30 points a game and 20 rebounds a game in that 16-0 run. So the fan was looking forward to me to turn it out the next season.
Oh, sure. And
I had this Greyhound bus accident. And ended up with meningitis in my back for the next 3 years and didn't regain my strength until I got into the NBA after 3 years of being sick and ill. I played even though I was ill with meningitis in my back.
How on earth did you get meningitis?
Well, the Greyhound bus hit us at 60 miles an hour.
And wow.
So we rear-ended us. And so the taxi cab driver, he died. I live.
Holy cow, that is
so insane. I went home that after they got released me from the hospital, I had all these stitches and glass and everything in my body and stuff. And I go home and I lay down because you know how when you have an accident, you're just totally exhausted.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? The mosquitoes came in and bit me while I'm asleep.
This is insane.
My metabolism was so low that my body accepted the meningitis. And for the next 3 years in Arkansas, it screwed up my 30 and 20 every night.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The records are still holding to this day. Bobby Portis don't hold them in Milwaukee right now. Dean Tolson holds the Razorback record right now. 22.5 a game and 13.2 rebounds.
Wow. Dean, like you talked about, you scored over 1,300 points at Arkansas. You averaged 22 and 13 as a senior, but you talked about when you went to Arkansas, you didn't have the grades. Mm-hmm. Your grades really, really started to get pretty good at Arkansas. What in the world was going on with your academics?
They gave them to me.
Is that what it was?
Yeah. To get me eligible.
You weren't earning them. They were giving them to you.
Yeah. The first 4 years, 18 to 21, I didn't go to class. I didn't do anything. I goofed up. I drive around in my car, and I go to the girls' dormitory every night.
Yeah.
Drink beer and do things I shouldn't be doing. And then break the ranks.
And Dean, like it or not, you still call those the good old days, don't you?
Yeah, I loved it. It was a hippie. It was a hippie movement.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. 20,000 white kids on campus and 200 blacks.
Sure.
1969, 1970.
And so now you're playing with meningitis and still dominating. Yes. How are you doing this?
Well, the doctor would examine me every game and tell me if I can play that game or not.
Okay.
And if he tell me I can't, he only told me I couldn't play once or twice. And if you tell me I can't play, I just break down in tears and it shatters me, man.
Oh, yeah.
I just didn't care. So when I wasn't supposed to play and he let me play, I would run down the court and pass out and faint.
My goodness.
And that interrupted my 30 points a game and 20 rebounds a game. I'm not lying to you. I had Kobe Bryant talent, man.
No, you absolutely did. You've got the numbers to prove it. I've got to ask you this, because down at Arkansas at that time, basketball program struggled a little bit under that head coach. But right after you left Arkansas, the Razorbacks bring in a coach by the name of Eddie Sutton. Eddie had some big time success in Fayetteville. Do you ever wish he had been born just a little bit later?
When he became head coach, he came out with a public statement and he says, there's only one player on that Razorback team prior to me taking this job that could have played for me. And his name is Dean Tolson.
Yeah.
And he said, you know what the scouting report says about Dean Tolson? Stop Tolson and you stop Arkansas.
And they still couldn't do it.
No, they couldn't stop me. I still hold the records to this day.
Dean, I wish you'd have played for Eddie Sutton. I'd have loved to seen that. You guys would have been unstoppable.
Look, here's the sad part about it.
Okay.
No dunking for 4 years.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I had to lay it up.
And
I've been dominating.
You'd been dominating. And sometimes people look at that and say, well, that's a fan thing. That's an excitement. No. That's a higher field goal percentage is what that is.
Exactly, David. Let me tell you what you do. Defensively, guys is trying to stop you. You take their heart out with that.
Yeah,
the more you slams, you've got to respect me.
Yep. And there's no deflection. There's no, you're going to put it down and that's it.
Well, if you got a 48-inch vertical, what do you think I'm going to do?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Hey, they didn't even keep block shot records in Arkansas when I was there for 3 years. I averaged 6-7 block shots a game. They didn't keep the records.
Yeah. That is ridiculous. And I see this in so many sports where you look back and you say they don't have the records. And I'm like, can we get someone on the film and go back and find this? Because they have done this for some players. And when they do, it's astounding what they find. Yeah.
You should never not keep someone's stats.
Agreed. 100%.
And my whole career politically has been buried because of how my story came about.
Yeah.
I buried it. Politically.
Sure.
And this is the point I want to, you know, eventually get to here on this show to share with the kids.
Yes.
No matter what goes on. Okay.
100%. I can't wait to get here. Dean, I'm enjoying our conversation here. I'm liking this quite a bit. Dean, in 1974, you become the first basketball player to be drafted by both the NBA and the ABA. You were selected by the Seattle Supersonics and by the New York Nets. What do you remember about the draft process? About the, because it wasn't like it is now, obviously, but what do you remember about it?
I remember that as a copy boy and a paper stuffer, the Kansas City Star, I used to work there when I was growing up in high school. And so I would go down there, and we stuffed these newspapers, stuffed the funny pages into the front page, pop, 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 pop. And then you put it the 10, and you pop 10 more, pop, 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 pop. And so when you get over 500 bundles, you start getting bonus. And so I got so good at it, and you know, you put these rubber tips on your fingers, and boy, you just, you know, and plus I'm working on my game at the same time, how quick I am, you know,
with
the ball and all this. And so when I graduated and got out of high school, I never really graduated, but when I got out of high school and I went to Arkansas and I was drafted, I would go home and still work at the Star on the weekend.
Okay.
And earn that some money in the summer on the weekend.
Yeah.
So 21 years old, I says, they don't have the draft on TV like they do now. I says, I'm going to go down to the Kansas City Star and watch my name come over the ticker tape.
Oh, wow.
On the, you know, it's code. It comes in on code.
Yeah.
It says, I'm looking for me to be selected by number two with Seattle after Tom Burleson, who won the national championship with David Thompson.
Sure.
And the name come across Leonard Gray. And Leonard Gray is my fourth cousin. He's like third or fourth cousin in my family.
Oh, wow.
He goes number two from Long Beach State with Jerry Lurkanian.
Yep.
I said, hey, what do they do to me? I'm better than he is. I said, here come the politics.
Wow.
And so when I came out of high school, out of college, I had this choice to play with Bill Russell or play with Dr. J.
Yeah.
And this dream I had when Wilt Chamberlain came to my house at 5 years old. And then 13 years later, I was playing for Bill Russell in Seattle at 21.
Wow.
Will Chamberlain dated my auntie.
Wow.
My dad's sister at KU.
Okay.
I'm born in Kansas.
Yeah.
Which is 60 miles, Lawrence, Kansas is 60 miles from where I was born.
Yeah.
And this is kind of why I wanted to go to KU.
Sure.
Stay in state, you know.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't cheat for him.
How different things might have been.
They wouldn't give me my grades.
So you get drafted by both leagues, by two different teams, like you talked about. At the time, the Nets have Doc. Yes. Seattle has Bill Russell as their head coach. How do you decide? What did you decide? What made you
pick? They had Dr. J and they had Dr. K.
That's right.
Uh-huh, Larry Keenan.
Yes.
And then I would have been Dr. T, I guess.
Got a lot of doctors
up
there.
It would have been a slam dunk fest going on.
Oh goodness. What made you choose? How'd you pick?
Bill Russell's NBA 11 championships.
Yeah.
And
that makes sense.
You know as well as I do that Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain changed the trajectory of the NBA forever.
Yep.
Those two guys single-handedly did that.
Sure.
I said, I want to play for the guy that got 11 rings. But I had no idea he would appreciate my game and bench me for 4 years.
Really?
Bench me, man. Solid bench me. Do you know who got the most points scored in 60 seconds in any NBA game? 2-point buckets?
No, I'd guess Rodney Rogers, but I'm going to be wrong.
Well, you're talking to him.
Wow. Now why do you think that was? What did Russell have was it a personal thing? Was it a professional thing? What do you think that was?
His philosophy of the Boston Celtics playbook was out of date when he came to the coach. Yeah. Nobody was slowing it down, getting it into the big. It was transition basketball. That was the new era.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, running, gunning, jumping like the ABA. That's how guys started playing in that era. Well, that was my game. I scored 12 points in 60 seconds in the very first NBA game I ever set my foot on the floor against the Atlanta Hawks. 60 seconds. I never played in the NBA before. But he put me in the game, and I was scared to death of the man because he had already cut me twice the first year. So when he finally activated me and put me in the game, I just go bananas all out there.
Yeah.
And Todd Fitzsimmons says, who is Dean Tulsa? Who is he? He just scored 12 points in 60 seconds. We were up 15. When he left out, we were up three. At the end of the game, we lost. Who is that guy? And sure enough, after that, I didn't play no more. I just get a minute here, 2 minutes there. But I had to prove to him for cutting me that I could play at that level against anybody.
Yeah.
And it didn't prove it to him. He called me. He said, he said, your nickname is Scatterass. You're wild. You're out of control. Go sit down. I said, I don't care what I am. I beat them.
Yeah.
He called me anything you want. I beat them.
Sure.
You won the game. What do you care? You need to think about changing your philosophy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, and you talked about the ABA was coming in with this new era of basketball. It was fast. It was high flying. It was so much fun. And people loved it. The fans loved it. People were going to the ABA games. I'm obviously in an ABA town. And I remember just being like, what is this? This isn't that boring walk it up. This is high flying. This is the next era. How many times did you sit around and go, I should have went to the Nets?
Yeah, right. I should have went play with Dr.
You would have fit in great out there.
But then I'm gonna tell you, I wouldn't have the story to share with you today.
I can't. I'm loving this. Hey, speaking though, first, I know that you are a smart enough guy that you still probably took some things from Bill Russell. You probably still learned something. What did you learn from him?
I learned that you kill a gnat with a sledgehammer.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand.
That's his philosophy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this man played with a broken cast, with a cast on his foot and a broken ankle. He said, I'm mean as a junkyard dog. And he said, I'll bite anybody, including Will Chamberlain. And he did.
Yeah, and he did.
I can't take anything away from the man other than he didn't treat me accordingly and appropriately in my career out there on the floor.
Sure.
Because I was one tough customer to deal with.
Hey, that team you were on was pretty darn good. You had Spencer Haywood. You had Fred Brown. You had Slick Watts. You had Shake and Bake Archie Clark. Yeah. You come into a talented team. No intimidation. You just came in and said, hey, it doesn't matter. I can play with these guys.
I don't care who you put between me and the basket. Same thing in high school. Same thing in college. I felt the same way in the NBA. I don't care who you put between me and the basket. I'm going to do you the Kobe Bryant job on you.
Yeah.
And I proved it. If he played me 20 minutes, I got 20 points. If he played me 18, I got 18. 15 points. 10 minutes, 10 points. 3 minutes, 3 points. I was a point a minute.
Did you ever have anyone that you get into the game, you look across and you say, hey, I'm not afraid of him, but holy cow, I'm playing against this guy. Who is the person that you're wowed by?
Okay. Dennis Johnson and Bobby Wilkerson, they was one and two. Indiana, Bobby Wilkerson and Dennis Johnson Pepperdine won 4 NBA championships. When he saw me play, he said, I'm not even going to make the team as good as you are, man. That's what Dennis Johnson told me. I says, oh, man, Russell's just funny acting. You're going to make the team. And he says, well, why ain't you playing? I said, he don't like me. And I says, he says, that's what I got to do to get the players, make him like me. I says, I spent the last 3 years trying to get him to like me, and he's never liked me. But he likes to have me over there when he can use me.
Yeah.
Whenever he needs me for those quick points off the bench, explosive. When the fans come in, I come in the game. Bob Blackburn, the voice of Sonics, he would say, Dean Tulsa is in the game. And instant offense, he just scored instant offense.
Yep.
I don't know why he don't play more. He said right on the mic. And I have nightmares to this day.
Oh, I'm sure you do. Dean, you played up there right around the heyday of that Sonics franchise. You were up there. They were building that championship team. How bad do we need a franchise back up there in Seattle?
Like yesterday.
Yeah.
Should already been back up there. And, you know, that's part of my platform is to bolster that where it was because it was stolen from the fans there and they did not deserve to have that be robbed of that team like they were.
Agreed. Agreed. And, you know, for younger listeners, they might not realize. You want to talk about being ahead of your time. That Seattle team was ahead of its time. Once they got past that era, they got in that champion. That was a fun team. That was a fun team.
They cut me for the fourth and final time, and they brought in a player by the name of Wally Walker from Portland.
Yeah.
And replaced me. I had been released and put on waivers three times. That's another record I hold. Being released and brought back to the same team four or five different times.
Unbelievable.
I'm also the lowest paid NBA player in NBA history.
Is that true?
$248 every 2 weeks for 4 years.
Mr. Tolson, you were born at the wrong time. You're born just a little bit too early. Just a little bit too early. You leave Seattle. You moved past Seattle, but you played over a decade internationally. Where did you go play after Seattle?
Went all over the world. The first job I took was up in Anchorage, Alaska. That was, you know, pretty much out of the country.
Yeah.
The lower 48, I mean, you know, it was really remote, isolated state up there. And we went up there and we was 27-4 and won the championship and stuff up there. And they put us in Sports Illustrated and everything. And first, in you know, semi-pro team in Anchorage, Alaska. And Ron Davis from Washington State University was the leading scorer. And I was the second leading scorer on the team. And we was 27-4. And from there, I left there and went to the Philippines.
Okay.
Me and Larry McNeil came out of Marquette.
Yeah.
He took me over there as his partner, and we scored so many points a game that they went to one player. He scored 50, and I scored 40. I scored 50, and he scored 40.
And wow.
He kept on to one player in the Philippines, and we used to play in this coliseum called Araneta Coliseum. That's where Muhammad Ali fought the Thrill of Manila.
Oh, yeah.
And the Filipinos packed the place with 30,000 every single night to see this play. 30,000 people every night. No miss, they pack it. I loved it. I'm slamming from the free throw line on guys and everything, and you know, blocking shots and rebounding. We had some star players over there, you know, like Billy Ray Bates and different guys, you know, to come over there. And Alton Lister and Glenn McDonald played for the Boston Celtics. I mean, you know, won the NBA championship with the Boston Celtics. We had a number of if you couldn't play. Like, you come over there, and so the guys that show up here, and I says, hey, man, I'm going to tell you something, how it is over here. I mean, you seem like a pretty nice guy. I'd like to see you keep your job. I said, but I got 25 now, and it's halftime. If I score 50, they're going to send you home on a plane ticket the same night. You're out of here. This is your fourth game, and I'm just warning you how they do over here.
Yeah.
Because I average 45 points a game.
This is insane.
Yeah.
Okay. This is absolutely crazy.
Yeah, they call me Filipino Dino.
I love it. I love it. Did you play anywhere else after the Philippines? Did you stay there and enjoy it there?
I went all down to South America, played in Argentina, played in Caracas, Venezuela, Sao Paulo, and Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Yeah. Played in Athens, Greece. Played in Italy, Spain, France, Belgium, Holland, Amsterdam, Germany.
You got a favorite? Philippines sounds like it's pretty high on the list. You got one that you were just like, oh, I would have stayed there a while.
Oh man, I was there 3 years. Yeah,
that must have been a good one.
And when I got to Athens, Greece, that was sort of the end of my career.
Okay.
One of the most beautiful places on the face of the earth.
Yeah.
Athens, Greece.
For sure.
The Mediterranean is just off the hook. And the Acropolis and, you know, the Trojan horse and all this, Sparta and all this. And, you know, it's just something else.
I'm sure.
History.
You've gotten to see the international game really grow.
Yeah,
there,
yeah.
It used to be they'd bring, you know, former NBA players or something like that over there to make. They've gotten a lot better, haven't they?
They actually formed those players to come to the NBA now.
Yes.
They raise them that way.
Yep. Okay. And they raise them playing a style of basketball.
Well, let me tell you the style that they raise them. They raise them to play fundamental basketball.
I was just going to ask you that.
This fancy dancy stuff and behind your back and all this, you know, cute stuff and all this. No, basic straightaway fundamentals. And you know what? Down the stretch, they're going to get you.
Yeah, no, you're right. And that's exactly where I was going with this. Because I know the era you were raised in, you were raised in that era of fundamentals. What do you think when you watch the NBA? And I'm not saying everybody, but there is a...
What do I see?
They're like, so talented. They're so talented.
Like last night.
Yes.
I watched the NBA All-Star game. Ridiculous.
It's so bad.
That's not basketball.
No. And they're so talented physically, they do not have a fundamental base. They don't have a fundamental base, though.
This myth about playing the game where you don't hurt me or I don't hurt you. Did you know the harder you play, the less you get hurt? Did you know that?
I did, because I believe I absolutely agree with you 100%.
Oh, do you?
Okay. Yes, I do.
Because I played that hard against everybody I played against.
Hey, there's a reason that guys used to play all 82.
Yeah,
hard. And now guys, and hard, and mm-hmm. and 38, 40 minutes a night. And now I'm going to play 65-ish. Okay, and I'm...
When I feel like it.
See?
Nah.
Nah.
I just said killing that with a sledgehammer. I used to hit 60 and 70 points on guys, man.
Yeah.
And I'm playing defense. I'm just hitting the points. I'm digging up on you. Right. If I got 60 and 70, you got 20. Maybe.
Well, and you're a phenomenal rebounder. So if you're going to finish that possession with a rebound, you're not getting that many.
No.
Yeah.
And as skinny as I was, you know, I didn't get to be 200 pounds until I was 35 years old.
Sure.
I'm D'ing up on guys like Bill Walton and Robert Parrish who outweighed me by 30 pounds. And you know what? You're not pushing me around.
Right.
You're not going to manhandle me.
Where'd that come from? Where'd that come from? Because in that era, you might have gotten in the gym a little bit, but it wasn't like it is. Was that just, were you just country strong? Did you just have that in you?
I was wiry.
Yeah.
Strong. See, like a snake, you hold him on the end, his tail, and then he bites you with his mouth. Okay. You grab him by his head, he whips you with his tail. Pow, right upside the head.
Sure.
You drop him, don't you? As soon as you let him go, I'm back up in the cup on you again. See? Yeah. And then next thing you know, you got 2-3 fouls on you. You're in trouble the rest of the night. Don't touch me. Well, and then I'm playing above the rim all night. So if you play below the rim, you in trouble. Robert Parrish played below the rim. Had 33 points and 18 rebounds on him when he rolled in Arkansas.
Wow.
You loving this, right?
I am loving it because I love the history of the of sports in general. I love the history of basketball. To go back and hear this stuff. No, I'm in heaven right now. I can sit here and talk to you all day. I got to ask you this, though, because you talked about not getting your grades in high school. You talked about struggling academically after high school and going to Arkansas as a result of that. Mm-hmm. Something changed. Something changed big for you. What was it that changed?
At the age of 32, I realized that I better learn to read and write and do math in my life.
Yeah.
At 32 years old, the light came on, ding. And I said, if you don't do it, and my mother encouraged me to do it and quit playing, retire.
Okay.
And so when that light came on, I had a contract to go to that back to Athens, Greece. And my mother hid the plane ticket and the passport and the contract in the attic at the house. I flew in to visit her. And she says, you just look awful to me. I said, what do you mean? I look awful. She said, you're running around with that damn basketball and you're brushing your teeth out of your suitcase. You spend up all your money. You get on the plane and you fly back over them places. I don't know if you're dead or alive, and I wouldn't be able to find you even if something did happen to you. I don't even know where to start. I said, well, mother, you go to the U.S. Embassy. That's your problem. You think you know every daggum thing. I said, well, mother, I want to still play. I said, so give me my plane ticket and my passport and my contract so I can leave. You're not getting it. Excuse me, mother. Give it to me. No. Sit down here. Now, have you ever asked yourself if you ever tried to study in school? I says, no. She says, well, ask yourself that now. Do you think you can go back down there to Arkansas and try to study? You think you can do that? I said, mother, I don't know. I just want that plane ticket and that passport and that contract so I can get out of here. And you know what? She walked around that house for the next 2 or 3 days with her mouth poked out, mad as heck at me, and would not give me the thing back. And then finally, she went up in the attic and got it and says, here you go. Now, I didn't talk to you, and you make the decision whether you're going to go back over there and play or you're going to go enroll at the University of Arkansas. And for one time, I listened to my mother. And I called Greece up and told him I'm not coming back. And I enrolled in the University of Arkansas as a freshman at 32 years old. And I graduated at 36 and overcame 124 hours of failing grades. I retook every single class for 4 years over again. Every single class I failed. And overcame illiteracy at the same time that I did it.
That is an amazing, amazing story. Your mom is a phenomenal human being.
Yeah, she's the hero in it.
Absolutely. That's incredible. I absolutely love that.
Yeah. And if she had done that, I would not be talking to you about this today.
Sure.
Well, that's why it's so important for us to get this message to these kids.
Yes.
That right there.
You're exactly right.
And if they believe in themselves, they can do this. I was illiterate. The kids ain't illiterate. They can read and write. See? But will they commit? Will they apply themselves? See, that's what my mother got me to do. She got me to commit and then go down and apply myself. And then I did it. But if I would have never committed and I never would have applied myself, I never would have graduated. And that's all these kids got to do. I went from a straight F student to a straight A student.
That's absolutely amazing. So, Dean, you are doing currently, you are working, you are looking to help kids that are struggling academically. And we know there are so many of them. And I know you get kids, sometimes you even get their parents, and they're looking at it and they're saying, hey, we're looking at the MBA. We're looking at wonderful. That's great. But this is something that's going to serve you the rest of your life.
Till you're 80, 90.
Yes. Not till you're 25, maybe 30. If you
fall off the face of the earth, you're going to jail. You're going to start using drugs. You're going to become homeless. You're going to be in a mental institution because you go crazy. You're going to commit crimes. You're going to do something you got no business doing. And when I was running around down here in that school and not getting my lesson, that's all I did 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for 4 years, go around doing things I ain't no business doing. And when I went back, I made the five vows. If you read the book, I made the five vows. The very things that I didn't do the first time around, the second time around, those five vows, I wasn't going to do those. Would you like to hear the five vows?
I would love to.
Number one, never ever skip a class for any reason. I don't care if you're sick, get in there. Number two, sit front and center in the classroom and listen to the teacher take notes. Don't sit in the back of the room and goof off and play grab butt with the rest of the kids and stupid games.
Yep.
Number three, turn your assignments in complete and on time.
That's a big one.
And type them if you have time to type them because the teacher don't want to read your chicken scratch. Number four, get a tutor if you don't understand the assignment and the lesson. Get help. Don't sit there and act like you know it and then make a bad grade.
Sure.
Don't wait till mid-semester to find out, oh, I got to drop the class now because I didn't get in.
Yep.
And number five, do not ever walk off that campus until you have that degree and you're holding it high in the air and you're showing it to the world that I did this. And nobody can deny or lie or take it away from you. That's yours for life for them 80 and 90 years. And yep. Be proud of that. And not only be proud of it, take it and use it to help others in society. And that's what this podcast is that I agreed to do with you today, Dolly Dose.
I absolutely love it because we have an era of kids and of parents right now that are scholarship hungry. And I understand it. They don't want to pay for that. Yes, yes. Go chase that. Go get that. But then use it and get the most out of it that you can. Because if you go and you don't take advantage of it, you've wasted an opportunity.
Look. Motivation and inspiration, right?
Sure.
Who's going to motivate you and inspire you to do that, what you just said? You are. And you know what? We're human beings. We're all going to make mistakes. I made a mistake. That's all I can tell you. Now, it's not the mistake. Is what did I do about the mistake? Ain't that what's important? And that's what kids have to understand what it takes to succeed in life. Is understand the mistake you made, correct it as quickly as you can, and get on with your program.
You know, what did they teach you in basketball when you made a mistake? Doesn't matter. Next play. Next play. Yes.
Next play. For the mistake.
Absolutely. And we kind of look at kids and go, well, you didn't.
Well, it's over.
It's over. No.
That ain't that wrong attitude. Everything in life is 80% attitude and 10% of what you do about it. Yeah. Okay? And the other 10 is you don't know or you don't understand.
Sure.
Okay? And there's nothing wrong with that either. I still struggle today with education.
Yeah.
But I just started a nonprofit organization to help these kids out of own pocket.
Tell me a little bit about your nonprofit. What does your organization do right now? What's the name of it? How can people find it? And what is it that you do?
It's called Global Oasis Literacy Foundation Incorporated. What we are is we are a nonprofit organization who sets examples for kids, motivates and inspires them to want to graduate from high school and college. Then after you graduate from high school and college, then even seek higher education as I did. See, when I got my undergraduate, I said, these people out here don't believe me. They think I'm playing, don't they? I'm going back and getting my master's. And not only am I going to get my master's, I'm going to graduate magna cum laude and show them that I'm not playing with them about this. I graduated in the top 10% of my class from an SEC school, which is the largest school, largest conference in the United States.
Yeah.
Alabama, Georgia, all of them, Auburn, all of them, Arkansas. And graduated in the top 10% of my class. And I had master's level statistics. That was the stumbling block. I never had a math class in my life until then. And so I go into the teacher's office and I'm crying tears. And I said, I never graduated. And she says, you're going to graduate and you're going to see half of these class drop this class in the first 2 weeks. But you're going to stay. And you're going to pass. And I said, well, how can you say that if I never had a math class? She said, I can't even believe you're here.
Yeah.
Let alone taking the class. She said, well, I'm going to tell you how easy it is. I said, yes, Miss Roberts. She says, Dean, do you know what a tape measure is? I says, oh, absolutely. She says, well, did you know there's four levels of measurement in statistics and that's all there is? I says, no. She says, I'll tell you what there are. There are ordinal, interval, ratio, and nominal. So I called them Ronnie, R-O-N-I. I never forgot it. She said, now take this tape measure. How many inches is this right here? I said, 1 inch. She put her finger on it. She said, what's that? I said, 3/4 inch. She said, what's that? I said, 1/32 inch. What's this? 1/8 inch. See? Right now, you can pass this class. Now, I'm going to tell you something. You're probably, I can tell you this without even doing a survey, that you are taller than 90-something percent of the people in this country. You. And she said, that's your hypothesis. And you're going to do an independent t-test to prove that. And then you're going to plot it on the bell curve, and you're going to plot it in between the degrees of frequency and the standard deviation. And it's going to tell you whether you're going to reject or retain your hypotheses. I said, huh? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
She said, that's how you prove your theory. There's only 1% of people that are tall as you or taller than you in America. And she said, that's this class. And if you stick with it and you learn all of the formulas, then the numbers will become easy and you can apply them if you set it up. The brackets and the square roots and the commas and the periods and the methods of working statistic formulas. And I did it. I got a 95 on the first test. I got a 97 on the second test. And I got a 65 on the final. And I got a B out of the class and became magna cum laude. I had 10 A and 1 B in my master's class.
So let me ask you this, because you come from the background that you came to.
Mm-hmm.
To reaching the level that you have, which mm-hmm. A lot of that is just, well, mom, let's give some to mom. And you, but you saying, no, I'm going to work this hard, because it would be easy mm-hmm. for mom to yell at you and you say, well, I'll go do the bare necessary and shut her up. Yeah. No. But you went and applied yourself. You've got a teacher that mm-hmm. takes some time, that has some passion for a kid that they see. We have a lot of kids right now that are falling through the cracks.
You're right.
You know it more than anyone.
They don't have to.
They don't have to. You're right. Why are they falling through the cracks?
Because we live in an attention-getting entertainment society. And it is a distraction. You agree?
I 100% agree. And I was hoping that's where you'd go.
Cell phone or whatever it is, right?
Yes, iPad, yes.
Computer, whatever. TV. Sure. Okay. No. So it distracts the kid. When I went back to school, I did 5 things. I would pray first for strength. I would cry to clear my mind.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's good for you.
Then I would lay my books out on my bed, and I would never take more than 4, maybe 5 classes. And I would do each assignment in each class and lay that book down on the floor, on the rug, one at a time. And I don't care if it's 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. Sometimes I'd even go to bed. I would just, I've got to get through these assignments so I can get to class the next day, because you don't want to get behind in your studies. That's when you make bad grades.
You're right.
So I would do those books one at a time, and that was my indication that I could peel that bedspread and peel it back and get in that bed. And some nights I didn't have number 1 hour, 2 hours to just close my eyes and jump up and run to class. This went on for 4 years to overcome illiteracy. And we're talking about pain versus failure. This is a painful process I'm going through.
Sure it is.
Okay. Well, kids don't like pain. What do? They quit.
Yes.
See? And what I learned is, as I went through this process, that I taught myself how learning can be fun and didn't even know it could be fun. I developed methods of learning that you wouldn't believe. I had a photographic memory and didn't know I had it.
Wow.
Recall.
Sure.
Memory. I could see things that nobody else could see. And my tutor, Marcy Harrell, she's in the book. She says, "It's a miracle. How are you doing it?" I said, "I don't even know myself. That's why I pray about it. And God's going to give me the strength to walk me through and tell me what to do and not do, to do this." And I'm the first person in American history to ever do it.
Dean, your story is absolutely inspiring. I love the work that you're doing, that you're going out and you're trying to give back, because like you've talked about already today, there's been 2 or 3 people that you've mentioned today that went and helped you. And that's what it takes. It takes people like that to say, okay, somebody help me, I'm going to go help someone else. And that is huge.
Each one teach one.
You're exactly right.
Don't cheat for him or her.
No. It's not helping.
No, that's not helping. You're matter of fact, you're crippling him.
Yes.
And that's what happened in my career. I was, for the lack of words, I don't like to use the word prostitution, but that's what happened.
Yeah.
They made money off me.
Yes, they made money off of you by enabling you when, yeah.
At every level. High school, college, and pro.
Yeah.
And so the outcome was disastrous.
Sure.
But the perseverance that I had to go through, I never seen no one do it in life.
Yeah.
That I know personally. Did it like this, what we talked.
Yeah.
And then play pro basketball in the NBA on top of it. Nobody. And you'll never see the story again. You'll never see it again. That's why, as long as I'm alive, everybody should be on that bandwagon helping me get this message to our kids.
Agreed.
Everybody in America. Forget your politics about what you think about me and my story and all. Put that over here.
Makes no difference.
It makes no difference. And you understand this, right?
Absolutely.
It ain't about race. None of this.
Nope. Makes no difference.
It's about helping people. Period.
Yes. Yes.
Anybody that wants and has the desire to learn, that's it.
Yeah.
And I'll, hey, go to my email, DeanTosa.com, and I will help you any way I can. I got all kinds of tricks and study habits that I developed myself. And after 40 years of me doing this, no one has ever asked me, Dean, how did you do it? Well, that's what the kids need to know is how I did it.
Yeah.
But the newspapers and stuff, they want to talk about the NBA and Lane College. Again, you know, Bill Walton and Robert Parrish and these people. It ain't got nothing to do with what we're talking about in this failing society that we are living in right now. It has nothing to do with you succeeding or not. We love sports, everybody. We love them.
Of course.
But you cannot go to the grocery store and buy something because you play sports. Look how great you are. You can be Michael Jordan. You can be that great, but you ain't gonna buy, that won't buy you groceries.
Sure.
You got to earn money to buy groceries. And to earn money and to earn a living wage, you need an education.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, you're exactly right. You know, when
$20 an hour doesn't do anything anymore, does it?
No, it doesn't go nearly far enough, and you put yourself in a position to eventually fail if you're looking at that short-sighted goal, whereas what you're talking about is a lifestyle goal, a lifetime goal.
Lifetime.
Yes. And that is a big, big difference. Sometimes we get short-sighted and we say, I want to go play here. I want to go to cool. But you're talking about a really small window of your life, whereas you're talking about the rest of your life.
Did you know that 75% of college kids, they graduated from high school and went to college, 75% of them move back in the home with their mom and dad before they graduate and drop out of school because they can't make it out there on their own?
Yeah.
That's a tragedy.
That is a tragedy. And you know, you brought up a point earlier about so many times what you went and did was hard. What you went and did going back was hard. Sometimes we don't want our kids to go through hard times. We want to dip them in Purell. We want to keep them safe. And I understand it. We all do. They got to take their bumps and bruises. They got to get tough, right, and they got to go out and earn things.
Right. And they got to learn to sacrifice. I can't go to that party tonight or that basketball game on the college campus. I can't go. I got to go home and do my lesson. You know how hard that was for me to figure that out, to do that? I can't go out with my girlfriend tonight to the movie. I got a test tomorrow. Sacrifice.
Yep, yep.
And I had to learn to do that as a grown man. I said, hey, y'all, everybody in my room, get out now. My dormitory room, you got to leave now. No more, no smoking weed and drinking beer and eating pizza.
Right.
Okay? You're out of here, all of you. Oh, Dean, man, we want to hang out with you and stuff, man. Talk NBA, drink beer and stuff. No, no, not tonight. Another night.
Yeah.
And so when you bide your time the right way, you will eventually graduate because you're doing the work.
Sure.
And make the look, don't approach a class with an idea, I'm just gonna make a C. I'm gonna make just get a D or just get by. Go into that class with the attitude, I'm gonna get an A. And then if you fall short of an A, working hard for that A, you probably end up with a B, like I did in statistics. And that's good enough. A's and B's will take you to the promised land.
Yeah, they will.
More A's than B's. Okay? But I should have been summa cum laude. As hard as I was working.
Right, right.
You know, that magna cum laude was my summa cum laude. To me.
Sure.
And I had a tutor 8 hours a day for 5 months. We studied 15 hours a day for 5 months from January to May. Graduated May.
Wow.
May the 12th, 2007. I was 57 years old with a master's.
Yeah.
So don't tell me it can't be done. You can't tell me that. You can tell somebody else that.
No, you're exactly right. Dean, your story is absolutely incredible. Love talking about your history and love, like I said, what you're doing for kids, what you're doing for young people. And you don't have to be a high school kid. You could be a kid. You could be a person saying, hey, I want to go back and I want to get more education that I didn't get when I did have that time. Go to DeanTolson.com. He's going to help you out. Go check out what he has over there. He's got things that are available to help you, and he is going to take a personal interest in you and do the best job he can. Hey, if he can do it and the work that he put in, he's going to help you do it as well.
Tell me your struggle, and I have a solution for every struggle that's out there. Because I went through it, didn't I? I struggled through it, didn't I? The adversity, right? Overcoming the adversity of the struggle and never quitting and never giving up and giving up until I advanced to the next level, all the way to a master's degree, magna cum laude. And you can do it too.
Dean, that is a perfect way to wind this up. I want to thank you for stopping by the Daily Dose. You are welcome to come back anytime. Would love to sit and talk more hoops with you, but like I said, you know, I'm a former high school basketball coach, and I know how many young people that are out there that do need that help, that are struggling, and you have the tools and you have the desire and the passion to help them get better. And that's what I love.
Talk to somebody, talk to people. If they see you working hard, they'll help you. Isn't that just a natural human instinct?
Of course it is.
If they see a kid working hard and they see he really wants to succeed and he would do anything to work that hard to be successful, most people will say, well, let me, he just needs a little guiding hand there. Let me show him. And then you show him, he grabs it, he runs with it, he picks up the ball and heads for the touchdown and the goals. And he's the happiest little kid in the room. And that's how you should do all of them, just like that, one at a time.
Agreed.
Personalized treatment for each one of them.
Yeah. Yeah, because everyone learns different.
Yeah, these glorified babysitters. Now, let's teach your kids. I used to teach class. I used to teach school. No nonsense in my class. You're going to get it. I taught elementary school, 1K-6.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. No nonsense.
Yep.
You're going to get your book out and we're going to do this together. You and me. We're going to figure it out together. And if we're going to repair this society in this country, do you agree, Daily, this is where it starts?
Oh, it has to. It has to start with our kids. We can go look for blame. We can look for different laws and different. Let's focus on our kids. Let's focus on our kids. If you do that, you're going to have a much better society.
They're the future. Give them hope.
Yep.
And then that's all I want to offer is hope for our kids. And when I had nobody to offer it to me, I want to offer it to them.
Well, I hope people take advantage of it. I hope people are coming to you because it's going to be something that you're never going to forget. And like we talked about here, it's going to be something that changes your life, not changes your day or changes it's going to change your life.
Eternity in your life that you can take that. I call it from the cradle to the grave.
Yep. You're exactly right.
Let's do it like that.
Let's do it like that. Dean, thank you so much for coming by the Daily Dose. You are welcome anytime. I appreciate your time so much today. Hey, next week on the Dose, yes, the NFL is over. We have no reason to talk about football whatsoever. Oh, except that I want to. So we're actually going to be looking at some of the off-season questions that we have for each NFL team. Plus, you know, we're going to keep you up on all that is going on in the world of sports as only we can. So be sure you tune into the Daily Dose and be sure you let a friend know to do the same. Hey, I want to say thank you so much to Dean Tolson for stopping by the Daily Dose and sharing your incredible story. Hey, if you know someone that is struggling with their academics, you can go to deantolson.com and you can get some help. I will also leave links to his information at dailydosesports.com so you can find them there as well. But hey, do not wait until you have somebody that's like ready to quit school or just give up. Go get help. You can tell Dean has so much passion for helping people. He's going to do his best for you. So make sure you go check that out. Hey, I also want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to the Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for going over to DailyDoseSports.com and checking out the new things going up there every week. But more than anything, thank you for sharing the show, for sharing the videos, for sharing the articles with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.